All right, from Studio Live in beautiful Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. Thanks again for joining us as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Today we're hitting episode 127. And so we'd like to invite you to join with us, and we're going to explore a little bit about Innisfree Farms today.
And so with us from Innisfree Farms is Chanchal Cabrera. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, Chanchal.
Pretty good.
Okay. And what are we going to be talking about today, John?
Well, I just really wanted to get in and start off by talking a little bit about your farm and how you got involved and what's going on there, because I know you guys seem to always have so many wonderful things. And I mean, I think my first introduction to you was years back, and you invited me down and just took me through a tour of your garden. And you were like, "These are my herbs," and you got
these are my friends.
These are my friends, and you're like, "I've got one for eating and one for medicine." And I was like, "Wait a second, they're separate things." And so yeah, it was just really interesting and completely eye opening for me just to see your garden and see where it, and I guess now how far it's grown, because you've gone from just this small farm to a lot more.
Yeah, we're definitely a lot more than a farm. So we've been here in the Comox Valley for 12 years, and we started out growing food. Right. Commercially, as a community-supported agriculture, we were the first one in the valley. Oh, wow. And we ran that for 7 years. We had 20 households. It was a 20-week season, which is a long season for a CSA. Most of them are 12 or 14. So it was a long season, and that was great, and we had a lot of fun, and we met a lot of chefs and a lot of foodies. But my background is herbal medicine. I have a Master of Science degree in herbal medicine from the University of Wales, and I've got 30 years. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. 30 years of clinical practice. So that was always my piece of the work. My husband was doing the food, and I was always starting up with the herb gardens. And then in 2013, my husband realized that he didn't really want to grow that much food for that much longer. He was coming up towards 70 and decided it was time for a change.
A little slower.
And he could retire again. So what to do with the property? So I ended up going back to school and in England, and I trained at Kew Gardens, which is kind of a world center of botanic gardens.
I have to admit, I've been there.
You've been to Kew. A lot of people have been to Kew.
Gorgeous.
So yeah. That's my alma mater. I was there in 2013 for 10 weeks, and I went back in 2014 for another 8 weeks. And I did their programs in botanic garden management, which is how to run a public garden.
Wow.
So it's not about gardening. It's more about, if so many people come through your gate in the first hour, how many bathrooms will you need, and how far will they walk between benches, and
wow.
How do you manage your volunteers and all sorts of things like that. So we rebranded ourselves as a botanic garden, and we are one of seven in British Columbia. But our specialty is food and medicine plants.
Right.
So we have the medicine gardens and we have the culinary gardens, and they're different gardens, but there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of herbs that are in both gardens.
Really?
Wow. And the medicine garden is all laid out in the body system. So herbs with the heart, herbs with the lungs, herbs with the kidneys. So it's a teaching garden, and I certainly harvest from there because I have a very busy clinic. So I'm seeing patients and I take a lot of my herbs from the garden. But a little bit, you know, step back from that. I guess maybe the purpose of it all is that we strongly believe that sustainability means growing food and medicine. We talk a lot about needing to eat local and eat seasonal and not have your strawberries from Chile in January and know your farmer and go to the farmer's market and pet your pig before you eat it and all that good stuff.
All that story, yeah.
But nobody's talking about the sustainability issues about medicine. So as the population grows and ages and we rely more and more on drugs, those drugs are petrochemical derivatives.
Right.
And they're manufactured in enormous factories, ironically called plants, but nothing green about them. And then they're individually blister bubble packed and then boxed and then cartons of boxes and then crates of cartons and then eventually on a ship and a container and then on a truck going around the country. And none of that is sustainable. It's all going to be thrown away packaging for this one tiny little pill, which often was a herb once.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So my big agenda here is, as much as I think it's important for people to have access to local sustainable food, I think we need local sustainable medicine. I think that in times to come in the future, when it's harder to transport food around the world and manufacture food the way we have today. I think the same is going to be true of medicines. And it's really helpful to be able to walk in the garden or walk in the woods and find your dinner and find your medicine.
That's amazing, actually. It's something I've honestly never thought about.
Most people don't think about it.
No, because I've just been getting on this, the sustainability and food security and questioning, you know, everything that we use and we need, how do we get it and how do we keep it sustainable?
So I would suggest that we should be questioning medicine sustainability.
That is an excellent question to put forward.
So a lot of our work at Innisfree Farm, we're actually rebranded as Innisfree Farm and Botanic Garden.
Right.
And a lot of the work there, because a botanic garden is predicated on education. That's what makes it different than a park.
Right.
A botanic garden provides education services. That's the mandate. Mm-hmm. And so our education is about how to grow and use local food and local medicine, things that will grow here. Not necessarily indigenous plants, or at least not only, but things that will grow in this climate.
Interesting. Okay. So there are indigenous plants then?
That are medicines?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing.
Absolutely. And there's an awful lot of things that you might think of as indigenous or endemic plants from this part of the world that really aren't. Like, have you noticed all the dandelions blooming this week?
Right.
Suddenly the sun came out, the dandelions are blooming. They were introduced. They're not native to North America.
Right.
Very happy here. But they're not native. And by the way, they're all sterile and cloning themselves.
Really?
Yeah, all those dandelions, which reproduce so happily, there's no sex involved.
Wow,
really? It's just ongoing.
They're all clones. Yeah.
Well, my daughter is enjoying it because she had me out picking dandelions with her for her dinner she was putting together. But still, it's kind of amazing to see those things.
Yeah, and by the way, dandelion flowers are full of good medicine. The head itself is quite bitter, but if you pick the flowers off, the actual petals, they're full of flavonoids, very, very anti-inflammatory, very good for oxidative stress. So instead of going and buying vitamin C, you could eat dandelion flowers.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Great. So let's go back to the farm just a little bit and maybe just describe what the farm looks like for people who've never been there and sort of give them a reason to why they would want to come and check out the farm.
Well, we're open to the public in the summer on Saturdays, 10 to 4, late June through to mid-September. And we do have a cafe with a Green Dream Cafe, we call ourselves. It's very low-key compared to what you fellows are doing in fancy restaurants. We're very low-key. It's me and my baking.
Nice.
And actually, we're looking to hire a baker this year. But it's a simple lunch. It's a farmhouse lunch with whatever we've got from the garden. So there's always an egg dish because we have chickens and we have some kind of vegetables and homemade breads and then a selection of baking and herbal teas. So that's happening just, you know, for people to casually come by. And then we do garden tours. So once there's a, you know, group of collection of people gathered up, we say, okay, who wants to come out for a garden tour? But actually you can self-tour around our gardens. Everything is labeled.
Okay.
So
this,
everything has its Latin name, its common name, and its family name, which is what you need in a botanic garden. And this year we've managed to secure some funding and we're going to be doing up maps and directional signs and pamphlets with maps of the individual gardens so that you can actually stand in the medicine garden and say, this is the heart bed, these are all the herbs in the heart bed.
Wow, wonderful. Mm.
So for visitors, there's self-guided tours or we take you around if you wish.
Right.
And we also host a number of events. So we do, in the summer, we do full moon labyrinth walks. We have one of the largest labyrinths in British Columbia.
I was checking out your labyrinth there online. Then.
And it is wheelchair accessible.
Right.
Wow.
And so we do full moon labyrinth walks in the summer. I mean, actually, it's open anytime. You can just knock on the door and walk the labyrinth. But full moon is quite lovely because it's built out of oyster shells. It glows in the moonlight.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So we until kind of dark. We started doing them at midnight, but people didn't want to stay up that late. So now we're going in about 9:30 or so, and it's dusk.
Okay.
And it's a big labyrinth. It can take a good half an hour to walk through.
Wow.
So that's quite lovely. We usually do a bit of chanting and sing a song and read a poem and make a little ritual out of it. And then this summer, we have every 2 years, and it's coming up this summer, we have our Vancouver Island Herbal Gathering.
Right.
And that is a big event.
I'm pointing at Darren right now because we went online.
We were checking it out.
We were checking it out when we first emailed you to get you on, and Darren's like, this happening? He's like, I'm going. I'm like,
you should totally come.
He's like, this is amazing.
I can't do the whole weekend, but I'll definitely come for one of the days.
Yep. Yeah. We, so in 2013, it was started, and I run it with Yara Willard from Harmonic Arts, which is a local herbal company, so we kind of co-host it. And the first year, it was very much just winging it. We didn't quite know what was going to happen, but 210 people showed up. So,
210 people.
Well, that sounded fun. So we did it again in 2015, and we had 270 people for 4 days, about 150 camping, a full meal plan, full kids program, and 4 different lectures or guided walks at each of the different teaching slots. So we had about 25 teachers. And we will again this year. We're looking like we're probably going to have to cap it at 300 this year.
300 is the limit this year.
And that's just because we have to book all the porta potties and things with a certain amount of advance notice. And the kitchen has to be geared up for it.
Of course.
So we do bring in a chef and, like I say, full meal plan.
Yeah, that's
and it's a lot of fun. So we have sort of academic type classes, but we also have hands-on demo type classes, making things. And we have herbal walks. So we'll have, I think this time, 6 different themed walks. There'll be a walk looking at medicinal trees. There'll be a walk looking at herbs that go into aromatherapy products. There'll be a herb walk looking just at herbs with the immune system. Mm-hmm. So we can theme the walks for different purposes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm literally speechless, and only that this is right up my alley, and I didn't know that there was all this information and right here. And I truly mean that. I'm not just saying that. I'm very much into really exploring what nature has to offer, and more so in the last few years, and just going out in the backyard and finding things. And again, I had no idea that there was a sort of wealth of information.
The Comox Valley, you know, it's a well-kept secret here.
Yeah.
So for your listeners, the Herbal Gathering is the second weekend of June, mm-hmm. and you can just Google Vancouver Island Herbal Gathering, and it'll all come up.
Yeah, for sure.
It is interesting how much goes on that we don't necessarily know about. This little town, Cumberland, where we are right now, has myself and Amanda Howe. We're 2 of the first people in the world to get herbal medicine degrees and Master of Science degrees in herbal medicine. We're 2 of the first people in the world. It's only about 15 of us worldwide, and 2 of us are right here in Cumberland.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? And we had to go all the way to the UK for that degree, and here we are living in Western Canada.
That is amazing, actually. Yeah. Well, and that's part of our podcast is just getting to know all these people and bringing them in there and connecting the dots and letting everyone out there know that there's some amazing talent here and some great information to be learned about the world and what we have to offer. So,
and I mean, I think that we're only able to scratch the surface. I think you'd agree that there's an insane amount of knowledge to be passed on or however, for someone like me to be learning. And so aside from, say, the herb festival or the walks, is there any other way that people can maybe learn more about this from you?
Yes, absolutely. There are lots of ways of learning about herbal medicine. What I offer specifically is a whole lot of different classes at Innisfree Farm. So I run everything from a beginner series that runs usually every year right through to once a month we do a student training clinic. So I have advanced students who have to get hours of supervised clinic practicum, and I run that once a month, and that's free for the public to come and get herbal care for no cost. That's as long as they don't mind the students poking at them. Because the students have to practice various skills and sign off on certain skill sets for clinics in order to get their professional designations.
Wow.
So it's being a bit of a guinea pig?
It's being a guinea pig, but it's all supervised. It's myself and a couple of naturopathic doctors that supervise. So the patients are never left alone with a student, and they're all advanced students anyways. But it's a free service.
Really?
And we invite people to come and be a patient. Right. And get actually pretty good care because all of our students have their own skill sets. Some of them already are massage therapists or nurses or nutritionists or have other skill sets as well.
And so they're just trying to expand.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that's what, you know, so yes, I do everything from very beginner level classes right up to professional trainings.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Mm-hmm. And where do people find Innisfree Farm?
Well, you can certainly Google Innisfree Farm.
Right.
You can also just Google my name, Chanchal Cabrera, and I have a website, chanchalcabrera.com.
Okay.
And all of my workshops and classes and such are offered up there.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And you're located in Royston.
I'm in Royston, but I have to say the internet is amazing. I teach all over the world. I run a degree program out of London.
Wow,
okay.
I was just teaching on the Shift Network that hit 95,000 listeners last month.
Wow.
That was just online. And I did an interview one afternoon, and then it goes out to 95,000 people across the world. And I know that because they were contacting me. People were contacting me from very far-flung places and saying they'd been listening.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, so I do run a clinical practice here in the Comox Valley. I also see patients in Vancouver, and I teach at the Naturopathic School in Vancouver. In fact, I've just finished a 12-year stint running the herbal medicine department at the Naturopathic School.
Wow.
I've just resigned after 12 years, so I can stay home and do my gardens.
You sound incredibly busy.
Yeah, but it's all the same stuff. It's all herbs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to ask you, what's the future hold for Innisfree and yourself, but I'm pretty sure it's fully booked.
More of the same. Innisfree Farm is, you know, is definitely a growing concern on every level, no pun intended. I mean, we have been actively fundraising for the Botanic Gardens, so we do run a not-for-profit there. It's called Gardens Without Borders. Mm-hmm. And we've been running it for a number of years to provide horticulture therapy services to people in the valley. So people with mental health or issues or physical disabilities that would benefit from being in the garden. And we run a whole program for that, which I'm trained and qualified to do. And Vancouver Island Health Authority, social services, workers' compensation, those kinds of groups send us individuals. So we are actively fundraising to be able to afford to have those people come and have the supervision that they need and the programs they need, and to build up the gardens, to make the gardens more and more interesting and valuable to visitors. Right. So we have a big sculpture garden. There's a local artist, Douglas Senft, who passed away, and we were the recipients of many of his pieces. So we have a big sculpture garden. So we're looking at putting out more information about that. So the gardens themselves are growing, literally, and becoming more and more visitor-friendly. And then we're just doing a lot more programs, a lot more classes and teaching. We run a very extensive apprenticeship. We will have 21 apprentices through the farm this summer from anywhere from 4 weeks to 8 weeks stay. They stay on site.
And what are they doing? They're running the farm?
They do the gardens, but they also get class time. So the apprenticeship is actually partly taught by doing and partly taught in lecture style.
Right.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So is the farm big enough to handle?
You know, amazing, it's only 7 acres, but we feel big.
Yeah.
For the amount of work we have, it feels big. We do back onto the forest. We back onto the Trent River Forest, which runs into the Cumberland Forest. So we like to say we have 500,000 acres on our back door, and it's quite true, actually.
Right.
And so, yes, we do a lot on the land. It's intensively cultivated. We have some open meadows, but we have a lot of cultivated land there.
Right. Mm-hmm. I can imagine so.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And we still grow food. We grow food for our own household, for our cafe, and for sale at the farm shop in the summer. So when the cafe is open, we've got a little shop going. We sell herbal products, herbal teas, and vegetables.
I think you got everything I wrote down. It's amazing. So
yeah.
The one thing we haven't talked about is your raspberries, because I know it's still most of the chefs in this community.
I wondered if you were
going to
bring
that up,
those raspberries. Yeah, it's nothing to do with me. I take no credit. My husband grows the raspberries. He worked for Agriculture Canada for 30 years. He's a soil scientist. And soft fruits and fruit diseases was a big part of his work. So he has some kind of magic touch with those raspberries. I don't know anyone who's ever seen a raspberry that big.
No.
They're almost embarrassing because they're truly organic. We don't do anything to it. In fact, we're not actually certified organic, and we get asked that a lot. We don't usually sell to third party. We sell to people who know us, so we haven't needed to register organic. But what we have done is we've actually trademarked a term, probiotic farming.
Okay.
Meaning that we are not so worried about growing vegetables. We grow healthy bacteria in the soil. Just like your microbiome, everybody's talking about the gut flora today.
Right.
So in my husband's line of work, he was involved with genetic engineering and ultimately with using Roundup, because most genetically engineered crops are grown to resist Roundup.
Right.
Roundup, unfortunately, is not only used on genetically engineered crops, it's actually used on every crop that's not organic.
Right.
And it's used as a desiccant to speed up drying of grains. It's used to kill off your potato tops to make the harvest easier. And Roundup is licensed, patented as an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. So every time you eat food that's not organic, you're killing off your microbiome.
Right,
you're damaging your gut flora. And now we see this huge uptick in autoimmune disease and cancer and many other conditions that might be related to microbiome disorder, and that might be related to Roundup.
Right.
And so we feel that, you know, organic is great, and of course an organic certification means you're not using Roundup, but we want to go beyond that, beyond organic, which actually means grow good bacteria. So just like your gut flora matters, your soil bacteria matters.
Right.
Grow good soil bacteria, then you'll grow good crops, and then you'll be organic. You won't need to spray because your crops will be healthy.
Well, I think I learned that from your husband.
Yeah.
It's about the soil.
It's about the soil.
Yeah, and I don't think it ever meant anything to me until I had those raspberries. You know, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, that the ground needs nutrients to make things grow properly.
So we do all the classic things about crop rotation, and obviously we feed our soil, and we especially feed our raspberries with what we take out from the chicken coop. So all winter we're putting that on the raspberry beds, and the raspberry canes, of course, grow up above that, so it's completely hygienic and clean.
Right.
And because the chickens are getting certified organic feed and all the stuff from the gardens, they're pretty healthy. Their poop is pretty healthy. And there it goes on the raspberries. And yes, they are so huge that we freeze them individually on trays, and when we put them into Ziploc bags and you thaw them later, they stay as individual raspberries.
Wow.
Which is pretty nice.
Yeah. Anybody else doing that will know that they probably turn to mush.
They do, egg. So, you know, a nameless fancy restaurant in this town who buys a lot of raspberries from us will put those raspberries on something like a cheesecake in January, and they still look good.
Right. They still look fresh.
And they still look almost fresh,
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, the raspberries are a bit of a feature. We did about 700 pounds last year.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is quite a lot.
Not bad.
Handpicked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today.
It's a pleasure.
We definitely want to bring you back and talk a little bit about herbs and medicine.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to chat with us about that.
Absolutely. Can
we'll,
do.
We'll wonderful. Do that. So just one quick, can you just give your information for people so that they...
Yes. So anybody who wants to reach me, I'll spell my name. It's Chanchal, Chanchal. Second name Cabrera, Cabrera. And the best way to reach me is through my website, chanchalcabrera.com, or through innisfreefarm.ca, which is the farm's website.
Perfect.
Well, thank you for talking with us. And we'd like to thank you for joining in with us again and listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. Don't forget to send your comments to us. We'd love to hear from you what you think about the show and what you'd like to hear from or who you'd like to talk to, and maybe how you can take this to your own community and showcase at your own home what's going, you know, how you can grow your food security. Thank you very much. Darren, you want to thank our sponsors?
Yeah, let's thank our sponsors, Butcher's Block and Courtney. There's the Atlas Cafe, of course, as always. Thank you so much for your support. And Ivan's Truffles, westcoastprovisions.com for constantly plugging us. Thanks so much for those. And Kirstenwood Music, as well as Studio Live here in Cumberland. The show wouldn't happen without all of you.
All right. Well, thank you for listening.